This is the third lecture of the afternoon, 7th, 10th. I wonder if you've all recovered from have and agree and so on. It just shows you the liability of flows, and if flows have an enormous importance to an individual, he will fall, of course, into this horrible trap. That's a trap. You've agreed to flows, then you've agreed that flows are dangerous. Have you ever protested to anybody that they were, their talk to you was destructive to you? That's all you've said. At that moment, a flow can destroy me. Why don't you just change that posture right now? By the way, who did you have to convince that you were working, not playing? You see, you agreed that there was such a thing as work. These things don't creep up on you in the night, by the way, and slide in sideways by telepathy and all of that sort of thing. You have to say good and loud, I agree that. And you say it in various ways, such as, oh, that is terribly destructive and that's very dangerous to me. Or, I am going to destroy you and you need to be punished. Or, pain is a terrible and horrible thing because look what you're doing to me with pain. Which is the same thing as you've got to obey the rules. And if you don't obey the rules, I'm going to apply pain to you. Pain you wanted. Oh boy, pain was valuable. Well, what do you do when you've got this game you're trying to play and this guy keeps rushing in and saying, we've just got all this all upset and we've got these, we've changed this whole thing around, you know, like me changing techniques. And you're not playing according to the rules. Well, the only reason you really didn't have any protest too much when I was changing techniques is I was just learning more rules that already existed. So I wasn't changing the rules, although to some people who didn't know we were tracking rules, that appeared to be a violation of the rules. They were used to dealing with mock-ups. The rules were so sacred and so deeply hidden and so terribly desirable, and they had to agree with them so thoroughly that you were supposed to operate as far from the actual rules as you could operate. When you start moving in on the rules, by the way, I've seen people in audiences and students and so forth all of a sudden jump and their eyes get kind of pop-eyed and a horrible feeling come over. My God, he knows. And that's very interesting when you get all of this added up and squared around, that the rules are so important. The rules were important only because you had to protect your postulates after you made your postulates. The reason you had to protect your postulates after you made your postulates, you wanted to have what you had had. And it made for randomity, and you went down the line a little further, and you had to protect the thing that you had protected with postulates, protect your right to make postulates. By that time, you were kind of getting dim on the subject of making postulates. And then somebody came along and changed the rules on you. And so it looked dogs here and after walk in the sky. And the birds, uniformly, are found in little burrows underground. And he said, therefore, because I do this, then all your dogs are going up in the sky, and there they go. You say, oh, my dogs, my poor, precious dogs. Why, it took me microseconds to make those dogs, and I've become terribly fond of them because every time I put an emotion on them of fondness and loyalty and cheerfulness and helpfulness, I feel it right back. And they're very good for that sort of thing. They're so soothing to my nerves. And there went your dogs, and you said, listen, fella, did you ever hear about a rule that had to do with pain? And he said, what's pain? Oh, you say, it's another sensation. Of course. The fellow says, a sensation? You mean there's good sensations, too, like I haven't heard about? Oh, yeah, this is a very good sensation. Now, I tell you, there you're standing there in this body you've got there. This is a beautiful mock-up, this beautiful body, and so forth. Actually has the ability to have sensation, doesn't it? You can prove everything by logic. It has the capacity to feel sensation. Isn't that true? And it has an unlimited capacity to feel sensation. Why, sure it does. He said, that's the way I mocked it up. All right. Now, if it has the unlimited ability to feel sensation, then it can feel any sensation. Isn't that true? Yeah. You say, all right, then it could feel pain, couldn't it? Well, sure. What's pain? And you say, now look, a pain has to do with attention units and various flows and so forth, going this way and that way. Right away, see? And the fellow says, how? He says, look, I'll show you. Okay, he says. So you got the attention units going this way and that way, and he didn't jump very bad. And you say, you see, you can't feel pain. I can too, he says. I can feel anything. Well, you can't either. You can't feel pain. You didn't jump. And I says, I can jump. And you say, all right, the next time I do this, let's make sure, let's prove that that body can actually feel pain. It could. He jumped. He said, isn't that an interesting game? So he went down the line, and instead of changing people's dogs, he went down the line and started to prove to people that they could feel pain. And the motto of this universe could be, amongst all other mottos that it has, prove it. Every time you could prove it, then there's a difference between rightness and wrongness. You see, and a fellow can be disqualified if he doesn't... Well, of course, there's no disqualification except to demonstrate to him his stupidity. And you demonstrated to him his stupidity by making him being proud of being gullible. So if he was very proud of being gullible, then he could have demonstrated to him that he was stupid. But then he'd decide not to be stupid by accepting your agreement and agreeing to it. And then you could have pain. Boy, was that valuable. And after that, you pulled your dogs down out of the ceiling. And he went around, all around the neighborhood, you know, all around the various other little patches of this and that existed, and proved to everybody. And the next time somebody came back, you say, I'm going to hurt you if you don't leave those dogs alone. Oh, don't do that, he says. Don't do that. I'm not disobeying the rules. He didn't care. And so you say, all right, all right. And then he'll treacherously make your dogs go and walk up in the sky anyhow. And you say, damn these people and these dogs. I mean, they won't leave my dogs alone. So you blow his head off, and he has to go to all the trouble of walking up a new head. But he felt pain when he did it. And he says, yes, you see, I'm really in this game because, you see, I rise. Now, it's gotten to a point where one of the tests of being human is, can one feel pain? That's right. That's right. One of the tests of being human is, can he feel pain? One of the things that really worries people, you get people walk in the hospital, doctor comes in and says, now let's see, what is your ability, what's your sensitivity on various areas of the body? This sticks you with pens and so forth, and all of a sudden he finds a place where you don't feel any pain. He has an area in the back. There's usually an area in the back that does. He thinks this is unusual. He only finds it in practically every patient he tests. But he's carrying the mission right along, boy. He's doing that good. And he says, oh, that's an anesthesia area. And the fellow says, I've got an anesthesia area. I can't feel pain in it. So he thinks if he can't feel pain, he can't feel anything. Naturally, he wants to feel sensation, so he has to feel pain too, so let's get that area alive. That's the thing to do, and sure enough, the track of agreement dictates that law. When a person's below 4.0, if he can't feel pain, he can't feel anything. If he can't feel pleasure, he can't feel pain. If he can feel pleasure, he feels pain. You get the identification between those two waves and two ideas and two agreements. Shouldn't be identified at all. A fellow should be able to go out and feel unlimited quantities of endless pleasure without ever once feeling a slightest twinge of pain. And there's no reason why he couldn't. There is no such thing as the Emersonian law of compensation, fortunately for us all. These guys would go around and try to make up new agreements in the substance of saying, now look, it all works out for the best and this best of all possible universes, and it's all for the best and this best of all possible universes. Didn't know about agree and have and disagree and not have simultaneously. They just didn't know about that. They didn't see lying right underfoot the dirtiest little trap that ever existed, because this all pulls the whole thing into a mass and is designed to make a solid object. All of that contradictory flow business winds up as a solid object. So as your free clear grows older and older and older, you have harder and harder time running incidents on him. It just gets almost impossible with a very old person to run a single incident. You just take the case and you start to run this single incident. And the bulk of the cases that you try this on, they just can't do it. They're solid. What you should do, you see, is work on space and work on reversing the cycle of action until you get them up curve a little bit, and all of a sudden all this loosens up. It doesn't matter much how old they are, you can do this. But it takes a little more time. But the identification level, it'll come down to a solid object. If you can feel pleasure, you can feel pain. And if you didn't have pain, you'd have no contrast so that you could feel pleasure. What the hell do you need a contrast for so you can feel pleasure? I sure know when I'm feeling pleasure. It happens to be utterly true that when you are in horrible condition, your GE is all worn out and your body's all drooping and you've been doing something for a long time and something like that, that any comfort and so forth is about 8 times as welcome. You're about 20 times as thirsty for a pleasure because it's been so long since you've had one. That's all. And the reason for that is because you know that's true. And the actuality is the fellow has a jaded appetite. I don't know, he's been running around the stew pots and helling around and raising the devil and the sensation and all that sort of thing. He finally got to a point where, well, and everything jaded, bored. So I had nothing left to live for, really. Oh, boy, think of the number of moralists that have been hanging on that guy's shoulder saying, if you drink, you are going to get a hobnail kidney. I would love to have somebody show me a hobnail kidney sometime. I'll use it to fix my boots with for my mountain climbing. But he says you shouldn't hell around and have a good time with women because that's scarcity. Scarcity has all got to be scarcity. There's no scarcity. I can't sell it to you. I didn't mean that in relationship to women. I was talking about anything in the mess universe. If something has no scarcity, the law of supply and demand, which is a law, really is a law. It's a law that works for anybody who has anything to sell. He enforces that law. Law of supply and demand. He says, now look, you've got to have a demand, and the reason you've got to have a demand is not because you have to have a demand, because I have to supply it. So anytime you have a demand to supply, you've got to sell the idea in reverse that there's going to be a demand for it. You can actually go into advertising and logic and everything else and tell people that there isn't a real good, big, observable demand. Really, even advertising done by J. Walter Thompson wouldn't possibly sell a product. Actually, advertising, trying to advertise these demands into shape, has only a small degree of success. The law of supply and demand is based on the law of scarcity, and if you want to settle supply and demand, whether it has to do with the inflation, deflation of money, all of these various principles, and so forth, you can break down the whole field of economics very easily. Economics is not a serious study, it's a rather humorous study. You start looking at inflation. Why do you have inflation? You have inflation because there's too much money and too few things to buy. Too much scarcity, in other words. And when you have deflation, that is when you have too many things to buy and not enough money to buy them. It's interesting, isn't it? I think of old FDR and Harry Hopkins and his aide, Stalin, and that wasn't on that staff. Harry Hopkins was in Moscow, that's right. And they get all this, and we've got to boondoggle, and we've got to put everybody on relief and then fix them up when they're on relief so they can't work for themselves. And as long as they're on relief, they've got to be complete slaves to the government so they won't work. And let's take away all the self-respect we can take away and then not give him anything and then tell him the thing to do is to be taken care of. Now, let's see. Freedom from. That's a new idea. We give him freedom from everything. And to go along the line that had created practically a socialist state ahead of its time. The U.S. was no more ripe to be a welfare state. It just wasn't. And so they dreamed up all these horrible pump-priming things and so on. The truth of the matter was there were too many goods and there was too little money with which to buy them. Of course, don't let anybody over in Wall Street hear that. But you see, the way you have to create money, that's pretty arduous. Somebody in Wall Street gets a big ledger, and that has to do with the Federal Reserve Bank, which is a private company which prints all of your money, because it says in the Constitution only the U.S. can print money. By the way, are those two statements disconnected? Well, they shouldn't be. It's all a legal country, and it's in the mass universe. It all goes right into and travels in agreement perfectly all the way along the line. Everything works out in its best of all possible world. That's fact. It says in the Constitution that only the U.S. can create money. Your money is printed by a private company known as the Federal Reserve Bank. That's not a U.S. institution. The U.S. owns some stock in it, that's about all. Well, anyhow, they write in a big ledger, and they write in the big ledger $8 billion. And then they send this down to Washington. We've just written in a ledger $8 billion, and Washington says, oh, you have? Oh, goody, goody, goody. And they get a whole bunch of certificates, and these are stock certificates of some sort, and then they fire them back immediately to New York, and they order them in New York. Then they look at these certificates, and they say, now we have been loaned this much money. Now we're going to give this much money. Now we have the right. And so they send these back to Washington, and then they print up all this money. I hope you're following me. Nobody since Alexander Hamilton dreamed up this horrendous scheme has been able to follow it. Anytime you see hundreds of thousands of pieces of paper, books, and so forth, written trying to explain the banking system of the U.S., you know they aren't showing where they argify and sputify. There's a dog in the machinery there someplace. Well, it's just a question of flows. That's all it is. All they had to do, actually, is when guys have lots of money, they look at deflation, so they can buy a hamburger for 10 cents a pound. And that makes them have more money. So that's a very simple trick, you see. Guys who have money don't want money created. And the guys who have money don't have any wants anyway, so there's no pressure on the thing. Let them eat cake. Same philosophy, Marie Antoinette. Oh, they are starving for bread? Well, let them eat cake. Meantime, big humanitarian principles going around, we all give them all freedom from. All they had to do was turn their damn printing presses on and throw some money out so they could buy the existing commodity. That's all. There has to be a dollar in existence in currency for every dollar of item to be purchased, minus the bank credits outstanding because of checking accounts. And it just works out. I mean, it's too simple. When that varies, and you have $2 of currency existing for every dollar's worth of commodity to be bought, you have a condition known as inflation, which is very dangerous, and which is solved by you denying yourself. Silly, isn't it? And if you have a deflationary situation, it's because there's only 50 cents there to buy a dollar's worth of currency. You know, that this town one time, in the days of old Ben Franklin, was almost ruined. It was in a terrible state of affairs. The crown wouldn't issue any money. And the doggondest system of trade was existing between Philadelphia and the backwoods. They didn't have any money. The crown wouldn't send any money over here. So Franklin and the rest of the boys finally turned some out. He was a good printer. And the situation resolved itself. There was all kinds of commodity, and there was no crown money with which to buy. Inflation, deflation. Now you get then that flows have a tendency in this universe to equalize, but in the process of equalizing, they compact. They make their space smaller. Now, the reason why this is because a flow, particles, and so forth, as a flow continues, the space in which it is flowing is seldom increased. New thought for you. You've got a space here that's 8 feet by 8 feet. It has 8 feet by 8 feet by 8 feet, and it has two men in it. And one of them has a little handy Jim Dandy emanator ray pistol. See? And he fires at the other man. The space does not increase. And you have into existence suddenly a lot of brand new particles. isn't old particles splattering out. I mean, he's making new motion, new particles. It's going into 8 feet. Now they're 8 feet apart again, and he shoots some other guy. And they're 8 feet apart again, and he shoots some other guy. And they're 8 feet apart again, and he shoots some other guy. But he's not handling time very well, and he's not handling flows very well. What happens? That 8 feet by 8 feet by 8 feet starts to get the pictures of more and more particles in it, and the shadows of particles in it, and more particles in it, and more particles in it, and it gets solider and solider and solider and solider. Now, just because transactions continue to be undertaken in the United States of America, at least somebody calls them business transactions, they're laughingly called that, the Federal Reserve Bank writes in its ledger and it forwards a stock or a bond or something towards it, and then it forwards some currency back, and then it's issued and so on. By the way, did you ever look into your pocketbook and find out that the money you had is not redeemable? The silver dollars are, and there are some fives that are. They say silver certificate, and the rest of the money says Federal Reserve Bank. It hasn't got anything to do with the U.S. government, except the U.S. government permitted it to be published. And that's backed up at the Federal Reserve Bank. It says right there very clearly that in return for it, that it's legal tender, and it'll be enforced by the bayonets of the United States. And if you don't take it, and the Federal Reserve Bank at any time will give you Federal Reserve Bank paper for it. Isn't that fascinating? it sort of says as long as we have bayonets and as long as we have a government, we'll have money. It says it doesn't have any dependency on much of anything else. Money depends upon force which can be directly applied for its consumption. And plus agreement to take it. Sometimes you turn the bayonets loose on people. You don't believe agreements are higher? You can turn bayonets loose on people and they still won't take money. They did that in Italy. The U.S., laughingly, all this freedom from dopiness wound up practically in a revolution that lost us all of Italy in spite of the battle games. It had a sheaf of wheat on it, the money that was being published and sent over there. Freedom from want money. And by God, there was not a kernel of wheat to be bought. That money could not buy wheat. And it was just because they put wheat on the money. It was just that upsetting, and nobody could spend the money for anything. The only way you got anybody work for anybody was to feed them. You give your laborers chow, they'd work. And you let them take home a little chow to their families, they'd work a lot harder. So that was the way they got paid, commodity, because the money was no good. Nobody'd take that money. It didn't matter how many bayonets you'd call out, this big sheaf of wheat, mockingly stamped on the back of these lira notes, prohibited its exchange. People knew they couldn't buy wheat with it. They knew they couldn't buy bread with it. So therefore, Italy was without money, to give you some kind of an idea. So the agreement is always higher than force. And you look all through this messed universe, and you'll find that to be the case. The agreement is higher than force. The messed universe hates to admit it, though. They try to use force to back up agreements. But actually, unless there was a real agreement existing between two contracting parties, not all the courts and all the force in God's creation can make that agreement come true. If there was no real agreement, if one of the guys was sitting there and saying, I'll sort of hook this contract around here and I intend to live up to it and so forth. It wasn't a contract. I don't care how much paper it was written on or anything else. You could write it on paper and fight for it in the courts, and the courts can enforce it and pass judgments and ooey. It won't exist, and finally you wind up, there's nothing there but end mess. Horrible mess. Because there was no agreement existed in the first place. All the force in the world couldn't make it come true. And if the force was used to make it come true, then we got laws of flows. That which was acquired was not worth having. You saw an example of this right in Dianetics and Scientology. Somebody didn't live up to an agreement. All of a sudden, there wasn't any agreement there. Force was used, and duress was used, and duress was used. All he wound up with was some end mess, and they're still sitting there wondering what happened to him. All right. Now, agreement is always senior to the flow. But when a person gets immersed down in courts, for instance, he knows he's being affected by flows. And the more flows flow in an area, the more particles are could be said to be in that area, and the solider it gets, therefore the less space there is per unit particle Remember, all we're talking about is space per unit particle. If you were as big as from here to the moon, what do you think you'd be worried about of the number of ridges which surround the mass body which you have now? It'd be space per unit particle. You'd have to search awfully hard in the space between here and the moon in order to find that body. You'd have to search with microscopes, believe me, till you finally had located this body, and so on. And as far as its ridges were concerned, its ridges would be very, very thin. Now, if you expanded these ridges out to fit you, what do you suppose the density of them would be? By good God, you could fly an airplane, you could fly a spaceship at thousands of miles a second through the thing without ever collecting any dust on it. These ridges that you're worried about, and so forth, that sit around and prohibit you from getting out of your body. I just give you the relative viewpoint in space. The relative viewpoint of anchor points. You get your anchor points away. You got your anchor points real up close and said that was from here to Jupiter. You, of course, would be that much bigger. Awfully simple problem. You say, all right, my anchor points are here and here, and the distance from here to here is the distance from here to the sun. And the distance from here to here is the difference to the distance to the outer orbit, Pluto. And if you just shut your eyes and visualize that as your anchor point, you'll feel crowded, but you'll feel that big. That's why you get an action cycle. Is per unit space, you get more and more particles. So it gets more and more solid, so it finally winds up to be an object. Therefore, where flows take place and space is not increased accordingly, you get solidity. And as solidity continues, the flows which go through have more and more conductivity. They can go through old flows. They can go through old particles. They start multiplying. They will actually, for a long time, gather in force. They will transmit and act as conductors of force because they're force. So therefore, you wonder why at length somebody down in the street can drop a pencil and you start like mad. It's because you have a very, very close conductivity of the force of impact of the manhole cover or whatever it is down in the street hitting you. It's being conducted through actual solid, relatively solid matter, which isn't solid really compared to air, but is solid enough to act as an optimum conductor. Therefore, it can drive you into action. Furthermore, that mass itself goes into action, and there you have the reactive command level of engrams at work. You can increase conductivity in the space. All right, we'll fire a pistol in a vacuum. If this room were a vacuum and I fired the pistol, the sound won't travel through the vacuum. But as you get particles in the room, more and more particles in the room, that sound begins to travel more and more clearly until if the room were made of solid, if it were fluid, completely fluid as in water, boy, that pistol fired would really deafen you. Now, that's another example of this. Now, you wonder why electronic flows can exist in force. They set themselves up an ion beam, and then they flow on the ion beam. They actually make paths of particles. And you're traveling with a wavelength which can go through paths of particles. Don't think that this whole folly-roll and nonsense about ether ever existed or ever will exist. To say empty space is empty and then there's ether in it was the silliest theory anybody ever got a hold of. Empty space is empty, and when you put an electrical beam through it, an electrical beam has sufficient potential in the formation of particles that it can then thereafter throw the particles out there and then conduct on them. Furthermore, space is just full of particles. Oh, it's the stuffed mess universe space. The mess universe is not only expanding, they hope, but it's getting more and more solid, more and more solid, more and more solid all the time. That's because flow, 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 flow. Now, you're pretty clear. It gets more and more solid, more and more solid. He flows and flows. He thinks the best thing to do to overcome force is use force. So he gets a new flow, and then he turns around and he adds a flow to that. And then a flow comes back at him, and he adds a flow to that. And he's believing thoroughly in flows, so he gets solider and solider and solider. And one day you come along and you say, get rid of that ridge. So he kind of feels like calling up the 3As and getting hold of one of their rescue trucks with the big cranes on the back of it to come and lift that ridge. Yeah, it looks that big and solid and heavy to him. It's just a collection of particles no longer in motion, which serve to conduct particles. And therefore, a particle hits the ridge. It's very easy for that particle to get to the precliff. Because it's a zoom. It just goes straight on through. One of the fastest ways to concentrate and get electricity is to shoot it through copper. That's why you have copper all the way through one of these machines. There isn't any real reason why you couldn't have that machine operating without a single wire. All you'd have to have is an intensity of flow, and a wavelength of flow, which could travel in that wise. Nothing to that. But in order to use low-order energy, low-volume, low-order energy, and direct it, surely, without thinking about it and so on, why, you, of course, put wires in. Let it flow along the wires, and you put it into tubes. Funny that the tubes have to operate in a vacuum, isn't it? All sorts of partial vacuums, all sorts of things. You get a partial vacuum, you rarefy and condense with it. And they rarefy and condense, and they pour it along a wire, and they condense it, and they rarefy it, and they make it do skips, and then they change its wavelength and its quality and throw it through a transformer and change its power output. And so on, and by the time they got through with the thing, they make this stuff do practically anything. They can certainly make it hear and talk. Fortunately, there are easier ways to make it hear and talk, otherwise you would never be able to hear and talk. You take the spectrum of wavelength. I wish I had a good spectrum of wavelength worked out. I'll have to write around and see if anybody has done any of this fundamental work. I seriously doubt they have. It's too fundamental. What is the gradient scale of wavelengths? I worked these out once or twice, sketching them over, but I haven't seen a full rundown on gradient scale of wavelengths. What's the biggest, grossest wave measured, and how does this skin on down and get smaller and smaller and smaller? And certainly nobody has measured the speed of them. Oh, this is wonderful in engineering. Do you know that they've had any rockets all over the place? And I think about spaceships, and they've got liners, airliners now with jet motors and everything. You still go around to these projects, and you say to the boys, if you've got a table of orifice pressures, orifice is the hole through which the flame comes. They say, what do you mean? You say, what is the optimum velocities for unit size of hole? Now, that's a simple problem. You have a fire hose, and how do you make that fire hose kick the hardest? By making the hose smaller, make the orifice smaller for that unit of water going through it, or do you make it larger for the unit of water that's going to go through it? You can finally rig it out, and you're changing the orifice, that is to say, the hole through which the water's coming. You can change that for the velocity of the fire hose so that it'll practically knock you halfway down the block every time you turn on a fire hose. In other words, you can get propulsion out of a fire hose. And if you were to change the velocity of the fire hose, you'd have to have a different size hole, wouldn't you? Change the velocity of the water coming through the fire hose, why, you wouldn't have any kickback. So you'd have to adjust the hole again. And what would you have for a new hole to kick you halfway down the block? The firemen are interested in this because they aren't interested in being kicked halfway down the block. And they're also interested in this because they want the water to go as high as possible on a building, most pressure, concentrated beam of any other kind of a particle. There's no real difference. So what do you know? What do they tell you on these big fancy projects where they have the English professors working under the guise of engineers? What do they tell you? They say, we use the same ones that we've been using. And you say, you mean what ones? Well, the fire hose tables, of course. You say, my God, man, don't tell me that you boys haven't gotten an electronics flow table that tells you the proper pressure for the proper velocity yet. Then they look kind of ashamed because they'll all of a sudden realize they must be talking to somebody, that must have read something about it sometime or another, and they'll get sort of ill at ease, and they'll say, well, I understand there's a project that's north of Los Angeles. Every project that never does anything is just north of Los Angeles, by the way. There's a project there that is measuring all this. I heard that for about 5 years. If at this time somebody finally has figured out an orifice table pressure, it'd be quite a surprise. But understand that they've got planes flying through the air madly in all directions, and they don't know the optimum size of the hole that the plane should shoot through. Wonderful job of disagreeing with the messed universe. We're supposed to agree with the messed universe. We're supposed to disagree with it, and they're supposed to agree with it. You see, and they shouldn't be disagreeing with it. Otherwise, they'll get processing done. They'll get theta clears. Quick. Just like they're getting theta clears right this minute. Flameouts. Never occurs to them to fix up their pilots, so all the pilots got to do is shoot a beam in there and light it again. They'd think that was a silly thing until you did it one day. You see a barrel of fuel sitting there, and you say, well, you could not only light something that had just done a flame out, you could probably fix all kinds of things up about the flame this way, and therefore it's an optimum thing, and you ought to pay $100 a pilot in order to have this thing done, or something like that. We make a good contract for you. And so on, you ought to do this. They say, well, no, and so on. How do we know, and so forth. And you say, well, I'll show you. Boom! There goes their gas dump. Say, you know, I don't think we ought to be doing this sort of thing. It might be dangerous. We've got to remember to protect the mass universe. We haven't any right to. On this sort of thing, you shouldn't use flows anyhow. You know, it's bad to use flows. You mustn't use force. When the cops come to arrest you, don't draw a gun. When they rush up the steps, don't knock them all back flat at the bottom with a look. That's not done. It is outside the rules and so forth. They're the only ones supposed to carry pistols, and they're the only ones that are right. It's right. So I'm just warning you that someday, when maybe Los Alamos Gordos blows up or something of the sort, and somebody comes around to arrest you, please restrain yourself. Don't knock anybody down the steps simply by looking at them. Or don't change an agreement that you've set up at the top of the steps that there's a German Tiger tank sitting there with 88s. All right. Flows. What's the subject of flows? Flows proceed. Flows flow from agreements. They don't flow from agreements. You just say they're there and they're there, and then after a while you say they're dangerous and they're dangerous, and after a while you say there's all kinds of them. They have great, great complexity, and they follow certain rules, and they have very great complexity and follow certain rules. After that, you say you couldn't live without them, and then you couldn't live without having things that have flows. That's the damnedest one. You couldn't live without having things that have flows, and you put it out into an automaticity bracket. And then you say, and those flows are so dangerous, you really don't want too much to do with them, and then you go down more scale. Then I have to have much more done for me, and then one day you say, ouch, my corns are hurting. Is there anything in relation between these two things? Yes, sir, you mean you set up flows, and you agreed there were flows, and you agree they hurt like hell, and then you agree that all of this goes on down scale, and finally you agree that you can't handle them. Well, somebody proved that to you, and then somebody came along and you, your level of flow handling is very low, believe me. The number of unit particles begin to collect around you. You see, you could just say, all my flows are now in yesterday. If you just drilled on that, you take mock-ups and put them in yesterday, and mock-ups and put them in last week, and mock-ups, and just get so you really knew those things. Mock them up, put them in. Mock them up, put them in. N-gram shows up. You say, that was in Tuesday. That was that. Hey, what do you know? You'd have to be tough enough to disagree with the mass universe, that's all. And it'll work. They'll be in last week, and they'll be in last year, and they'll be 10,000 years ago. And you just string them down and just make them disappear. That's all you're doing. It's a fast method of making them disappear, saying they have time on them. That's the greatest pretense of all. And that out was left because nobody could crack it. After they hid that rule, Then they insisted that it had never been made. You just try to take an instantaneous proposition and then tell somebody there's such a thing as time. Won't work. So you have to run into a disappearing act to prove it. And time has stayed just that, a disappearing act. Gradual disappearance or sudden disappearance. You can cultivate the quality of making sudden disappearances. You can. You can disappear out of existence, your whole doggone engram bang. Boom. There, you're just handling flows. You're just handling lots of flows, and you're handling them suddenly and with great ease. The only thing that really holds a pre-clear in the body is because too many particles have occupied the space immediately in front of him or behind him or around him. He can't occupy the body anymore because it's already been occupied too often by these particles. What is a particle? A particle is a little tiny thing which is going on one corner of one electron which is in one atom, or it is an electron which is going around a proton, or it is an electron and a proton, or it is several electrons and several protons, or it's a formed molecule, such as a drop molecule of water, or it's a drop of something, or it's a brick, or it's a building, or it's a planet, or it's a universe. What is the difference between the first particle and the last particle? It had too much in it for the space which it held. That simple? You say too much what? Too much postulate, of course. Postulates don't occupy space. You say something is there, you've made a postulate, it's there. And then by successive chain, you say it flows, it disperses, it gathers in ridges, and that's a particle. And then those particles interflow with other particles, and then you're all set, and the next thing you know, you got all these particles. And gee, it was a lot of work to do. It took microseconds to build all this, so we've really got to hang on them because they're awfully precious, and we better not explode them or say they don't exist. And all you have to do is just go back up that track and the particles go kaboom, kaboom, kaboom. You wonder what's happening to all this. You can blow things up. You can blow things up and shake the neighborhood every once in a while, by the way. Don't blow your mock-ups too emphatically near gas works. They might not, you might say, well, they're just real to me. You might find out someday that's not quite true. You might forget and go up tone scale very fast, you see. Forget all these things you'd agreed to and one morning walk out 12 feet tall and knock off the top of the Washington Monument or something. Now, the whole study, then, is a study of impaction of flows or thickness of flows. And flows do those three things. They flow, they disperse, they gather in solid lumps, ridges. You get enough ridges together, and enough ridges go against enough ridges, and a little enough space gets in between them, and a little more, less space in between them. What do you know? You finally got what? You got solid matter. Visible solid matter. Anybody can see it. It's been agreed upon so often that it's all shop-worn, and you can polish it down and make it into a car or something. All right. Now, where we get these flows, we have, then, a problem of space. And where the particles of the flow are too close together, that means the guy has too little space for the amount of flow he has, and sure business of an auditor either to dispense with and throw out or take the kick out or the postulates out that made the flows, or just increase the space with regard to the flows, or suddenly get the terrific knack of making chunks of flows, energy, and so forth just disappear. If you were to be able to do that with the engram bank, you actually could do this. You see, in present time, you've agreed that anything can happen in present time will influence the future. Any change of havingness in present time is in your capability to do without taking too much responsibility. You would have to take responsibility for a great deal to change a past havingness. You've agreed something can be a past havingness. So therefore, if you change that, then you've got to remodel a lot of determinisms. But right now, there are very few future determinisms, so you could change anything in the present time you wanted to change. So you could suddenly get to this point where you could make facsimiles go away, lots of facsimiles would go away. You could suddenly take a look over here and see this chair, and you could say, poof, that's in yesterday. And it would have been in yesterday, so you put it in the year 922. As long as you put it in the year 922 A.D., where it did not particularly influence the will and determinism of many others and make the whole world backtrack on this agreement would be quite chaotic. Enough to do that to blow up the universe, by the way. It's the handiest little destructive mechanism known, is to have the enemy at breakfast the day before at the middle of the battle. The chair, you would look at the chair and you see I put that in the year 922 A.D. Good. There's a better way of doing it. You say, well, now disappear. And it disappears. It won't be there. Now, somebody else equally up to you and on your team playing the game or something of sort said, the chair's now sitting there. Now, you shouldn't do that. They need that chair. And so you say, well, all right, they need that chair. The chair will now disappear, and a golden chair will sit there, and it'll be solid gold with rubies encrusted on it. There's no trick to that. Honest, Pete. I've heard auditors say, all right, now I'm a theta clear. I can get outside of my body and I can go around in circles and I can do all these things. And I wonder what a theta clear can do. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't been able to figure out that he could do very much more than that and so forth. Here's the guy all the time. He keeps, every time he gets up the tone scale a little bit, he goes back, zoom, and he tries to run flows or tries to run processes of some sort or another, process the real universe. He has to get back in there and agree and agree and agree and propitiate. And then he goes out and for 15 minutes in auditing, he runs a flock of mock-ups and he feels a lot better for it. And then he goes out and he agrees and propitiates for the next 23 hours and 45 minutes. And then he gets 15 minutes of mock-ups and he feels a lot better for it. He's still climbing up 3 inches and only falling back 2 3/4. He's still making it. He can make it on that scale. But don't let me hear anybody saying one of two things. One, gee, it certainly takes a long time to get up to a cleared theta clear. You're damn right it does. Drill, 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 drill. Mock-ups, 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 mock-ups. Work, 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 work. Play, 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 play. And the other one is, the guy goes back into action in the universe. He goes back into this plane of action. He'll halt himself right there. He just won't have anything more to do with processing. He won't try to develop himself anymore. So he just won't try to develop anything else. So he'll hit that, and then he'll sag a ways. And then one day he'll say, you know, I'm sagging. I'm not able to do this and that and so forth like I was. I'll have to get a little processing. So he gets a little bit of processing. He comes back up here again, and then he goes along that way, and he sags a little bit. Well, he could go between those two points. Till hell froze over. He's a lot better off than he ever was before. He's got those two, the high point and the somewhat lower point that he can vacillate between. But when it comes to coming on up the tone scale and out through the top and following this thing through, you bet it takes a lot of processing. It takes a lot of things. We'll go into all that it does take. And one of the first things it takes is picking up and learning how to handle the smallest units of force and force, of course, as space connected with it. And you learn to handle this and you get better and better and better and better and better, and it's a very easy route out. Doggone road is just studded with milestones, direction posts, everything else, and it doesn't need a single one of them. It's just a straight ribbon highway that goes straight to glory. And it says, all the way down along it, be willing to handle force and never depend on it for a second. Be able to use it and never need it. Fascinating, huh? That's all there is to it. What do? You drill on handling force, and it gets better and better and better and better and better and better. Now, I understand that we had some about this. Scientology 8008 is a roadmap. Every time you start a guy on this road and try to turn him back onto the other road of let's face reality all over again, you're going to have a crash. Don't let him start running flows as such, facsimiles as such, or anything else. Scientology 8008 is named Scientology 8008 because it is the roadmap of a process. And it says the attainment of infinity by the reduction of the messed universe apparency of the messed universe's infinity to zero and the increase of one's own apparent zero to an infinity of his own universe. It's roadmaps, roadmap. And when you reduce the messed universe's infinity toward zero, you do it by reversing a cycle of action. I want to show you something very interesting about that. Here's your cycle of action. And here's 8,008. And those first two eights, this is the mess universe, this is the mess universe, and this is your own universe, your own universe. And that's a curve that goes from here to here, and that's a curve that goes from there to there. And this first curve that goes across these two things here, that curve right there, is stop, change, start. And that curve there is start, change, stop. You get that? So this is death, alteration, creation. This is identification. This is association. And this is differentiation. And any other cycle of action we have, including this one, desire, enforce, and inhibit. That's the DEI cycle. You could call it the God cycle, Latin DEI. Desire, enforce, and inhibit. You think you're going to ever get past the point of desire on this action cycle between infinity of mess? You've got to go inhibit, enforce, and desire. And that is right here, inhibit, enforce, and desire. How do you think you're going to get out of the mess universe if you keep saying, I don't want it? Its vectors are all backwards. If you say to the mess universe, I don't want you, it's going to hold on. I don't want you, it's going to have you. How do you get out of that bear trap? You have to want it. I told you yesterday, you had to be able to limit yourself in nothing in comparison to what your desire level was. You have to want to live. You have to be willing to use your beingness and so forth in all the living there is to do. That doesn't mean in evil things or all this sort of thing. You just have to want this universe, that's all. And then know at the same time that you don't want too much. You have to be able to want and experience the sensations of this universe. You have to take as a high level of tolerance at speed. In other words, you've got to be able to live in order to back out of the universe. You've got to reverse the cycle. You never got out of the universe. Nobody ever got out of here by wanting to get out because of the reversal factors. It's quite important. And that's the most important thing there is to learn about flow, I think, is that this universe goes backwards. Now, I'll tell you another little trick. Who's the guy who's never seen any engrams? Never been able to see an engram? Well, I tell you what I want that guy to do. I want that guy to outflow like hell against these things he was trying to pull in. Just pour an energy out in front of him. He'll see something very peculiar. He'll see incidents turning up. Sure, he says, I don't want them. They're going to move right in on him and lighten up. He's been saying in the past, I want them so I can run them. And of course, they moved away and went blind. He didn't see them. So he flows against them. All of a sudden, they turn up, fresh, ready to be run, And if he outflows just a little bit longer, they'll blow. Isn't that horrible? So, in order to get out of the universe, you have to desire. Now, this mechanism is incidentally one of the interesting points of hypnotism. When a person gets very groggy in hypnosis, he's been put down to a point where he's very obedient to flows, which is the worst thing wrong with hypnosis. He's been put along that strand, and he had no way to bail him out. But if you told him to try not to do something, he would do it. Every time when he got low on the tone scale, when he tried to use his will during his hypnotized period, when he tried to use his will to prevent himself from doing something, it happened. Try to stop your hands from moving like this. Now, your hands are going around each other. Now, try to stop them. And his hands speed right up. And he tries to stop them. Hell with it. See? Now you say, all right, now speed your hands up. They slow down. So when a person is grossly affected by flows, very grossly affected by flows, he runs in opposites. The little girl wants to be bad, she's good. She wants to be good, she's bad. She wants some candy, she can't have any. That's the level we're talking about, lower band, Homo sapiens band. When she's well down that band and heavily affected by flows and quite frightened of flows, everything will go in reverse. She wants to say no, she says yes. She beholds herself with horror because she can't trust herself. Yeah, she can't trust herself. You mean she can't trust this universe? It's the universe doing it. She's running in opposites. Now, that happens, you put a communications line on somebody's head. You put a communication line on somebody's head, and you get a flow up and down this line. This is nice as you please. Nice flow up and down the line. Supposing you want sensation on that line. And supposing you're so bad off that you're identifying communication flows with sensation flows with effort flows. Uh-oh. You try to pick up sensation from the beautiful sunset. You try to pick up a communication from somebody. You try to pick up sensation from this lovely body. And you cave the bank in. You literally cave the bank in. You can practically crush your skull in if you get low on the tone scale and you desire sensation up a communication line. Now, you ask a preclear when he puts a communicate, have him put a communication line on him, on take himself and somebody else, and have him put a communication line up. Don't say anything else. Just say, you got those two bodies? All right, now put a communication line up. Then say, what body did you put it to first? Oh, you'll say the other body, of course. And then you put it on your body? That's right. This character is reversed on flows. He gets right and left direction reversals. He gets upside down things when they ought to be right side up. Why? When he put the communication line out, he put it out to pick up sensation. He wanted sensation from the other person leading to him. His desire in life was to obtain a flow on that communication line from the environment to himself. And when he did that, he decided also that anything else could come up that line. Therefore, he is an effect, and therefore he is not putting out heavy power. He is skipping over the initial steps. The initial steps are, is you have to put the emotion there to feel it. How do you cure that with a preclear? Not just by running flows in space. That's easy, but by putting emotions on things and then re-experiencing them back. And he'll finally get over the necessity to string communication lines in that fashion to get flows. He'll realize he was doing it all the time anyhow. One of these days he'll realize that. You don't have to force that on him. Just do it until one day he knows he's doing that. And he'll be very amused, and his ability to handle flows comes way up the line. Because what is the sole thing that is wrong with a flow? Is it'll contain sensation, it'll contain very welcome things. A person wants the flow, and as long as flows are very valuable, and as long as a person is identifying every kind of flow with every other kind of flow, he becomes the effect of every kind of flow. So his whole bank caves in on him. The remedy is to differentiate amongst flows, and to demonstrate to him clearly and conclusively that the flow is unnecessary for the receipt of sensation. You do that with drills, not by educating him. And you do these drills by mocking up and running emotions from the bottom to the top of the scale. See? From the bottom of the scale up toward start. And the way you do that is to run from low base emotions on up to higher base emotions. I mean, apathy, grief to fear, not fear to grief to apathy. That's agreeing on the cycle. Let's run it from apathy, grief, fear, anger, resentment. Only let's get it up there to a point and drill him, please, to a point where the sensation he gets is much superior to any he gets, or he thinks he gets from the mass universe. Let's get it to that point. Why? Because he's putting the intensity on it all the time. And all of a sudden he realizes he's doing this, and he also realizes here you have this high tension, high velocity sensation on these lines. To hell with the low base. Have to get the stuff, have to get sensation from the environment. Why do we have to get sensation? Well, we can't get sensation from the environment because we put it there to perceive it. Oh, what a terrible trick. When a person gets way down tone scale, his time factor and his occlusion factors are such that he doesn't know what his left hand is doing when his right hand is doing something else. He really doesn't. He does things in opposites. He'll say, I want to be good, then I'm bad. If I want something, that's the first reason I can't have it. He gets all these reversals of flows. And when you're dealing low on the tone scale with flows, you get all these very undesirable conditions of reaction. And you get, in addition to that, this thing about communication lines. Now, the guy wants good news. The guy keeps wanting good news from the environment, good news from the environment. He wants the environment to grant him a license to survive. He keeps wanting good news and good news and good news and good news and good news from the environment all the time. Boy, the first thing you know, there's nothing. Just the tiniest little flicker of bad news will knock his brains out. There's another drill for that. Just keep handing him bad news. Think up all the bad news you can possibly think up in order to hand him. Get telegrams that this one is dead, that that one's dead, and other people receiving telegrams that he's dead and mangled and bankrupt and broke, and everything he cherishes and thinks is wonderful in the world is gone to hell. And just keep any kind of a mock-up you can think of that is dull, dismal, horrible, bad, and shocking news. And you know what will happen? That guy's communication line will reverse. He'll stop fearing the other end of the terminal. Just keep giving them to him. All right, now get a telegram. Get a telegram that your wife just strangled a baby. Now read the telegram. Now get a tactile on that telegram. Okay, let's read it again. All right, now let's lay it aside. Now let's pretend like you didn't see it at all, and you were feeling happy, and then all of a sudden, you get this telegram. All right, you got that? Your wife strangled the baby. So forth. He'll finally start to read it. The wife strangled the baby, and the clothesline is therefore all frayed. And I'm mad as hell about that. You just start to run off the hinges, and it actually solves a person's terror of getting bad news. The reason why most people are going around just in terror, really in terror, is they think they're going to receive bad news. Every time they walk into the job in the morning, they think there might be a paper slip that way. Every time they come home at night, they think maybe the landlord or an officer of the law or somebody's going to be waiting for them there with some bad news. They get away for a weekend. They can't enjoy the weekend because they forgot to turn off the electric iron. What would this result in? This would result in loss of house and all the possessions. What you're doing then is curing the fear of receiving news of loss. Loss is not important. You can always recreate loss. Okay. Now, I hope you know all there is to know on the subject. There are component parts of these line flows that I said I would cover. They're four in number. There's the line flowing out, and you trying not to flow the line out. There's the line flowing in, and you trying not to let it flow in. Those are four actions. There's somebody else making a line flow in, him trying not to let it flow in. You trying not to let it flow in, and you trying to flow it out. More four actions. A bracket, the definition of a bracket. A bracket is the individual does it himself, Somebody else does it. Others do it. Or the individual does it to somebody else, or somebody does it to him, or others do it to others. And that's the technical definition of a bracket. Therefore, you should use brackets in all of your mock-ups. Being done to the preclear doing it to somebody else, and others doing it to others. And you would be running a complete bracket on a mock-up that would solve all possible flows per incident. Now, I hope you are very learned. You look very, well, you look very sad, but there's no reason to look sad. Okay? See you later this evening.